everyone, and welcome back to the Time Shifters podcast. We are returned to studio, so I'm here with Matt. Welcome back, Matt. It has been a little while since we've talked, actually.
It has, and I'm well rested.
Good, good. Yeah, we're kind of pulling back the curtain a little bit. People, you know, we record every couple weeks, and it's actually been a month since we recorded, I think.
Yep, took several vacations. One was like a quick in and out vacation with a friend to Niagara Falls, and then the other was kind of this more of an annual thing I do where I go to the New York Adirondacks, spent a week there,
nice.
Did some hiking, climbed a mountain, ate a lot of greasy food, loved it. So, yeah. Good time. Good. Took the boat out a bunch. Yeah,
yeah, no, that sounds exactly what a vacation's for. It's perfect. And you look refreshed, so welcome back. Glad that everything went fine. You enjoyed yourself.
Thank you.
I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in again and just remind you that you can continue to do so by subscribing through Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, or pretty much any podcatcher that you use. You can find us. It'll pull us down. You can send any feedback or anything to timeshifterspodcast@gmail.com. And you can, of course, join our Facebook group. Just go to facebook.com and search for Time Shifters and choose the group and not the page, and you will get us. Although, like I said before, if you go for the page, it's got some good music. The Time Shifters group there, I like them. The album hasn't come out yet. I keep looking, but I'm looking forward to it.
We've kind of unofficially endorsed each other. So.
Oh, and Twitter, of course. You can follow us on Twitter at Time Shifters Pod and at Movies at the Mat. I've been a little lax on the Twitter here lately. I haven't been. I go in spurts. So there'll be weeks where I'm just like twittering away, and then there'll be a couple weeks where it's like, I really got nothing.
I am quite active on there.
Yes, you're much more active.
I get involved in a lot of conversations with people who think they know better, and then I just, I'm like, well, here are some facts, and then they stop tweeting at me.
Yes. Maybe while we're on the subject of Twitter, we can kind of move right into some news, because something that came up with the in the Twitterverse or whatever, it was connected to something we talked about the last time we spoke. You were talking about they were making a movie about Batwoman.
A show
about Batwoman. At the time, I don't think there was any casting news, and since then there has been, and there's been unfortunately some backlash on Twitter.
Shocking.
Yeah, I know. So who was the cast? It was
They've casted Ruby Rose mm-hmm. to play Kate Kane, a.k.a. Batwoman. She will definitely appear in the crossover events, the CW, so that'll be the crossover between Supergirl, Arrow, and Flash. I don't believe Legends of Tomorrow is getting involved this time.
I wonder if they're going to use that as like the kind of like the backdoor pilot kind of.
That yeah, I don't know if it'll be her origin story or if it'll be her showing up full-fledged Batwoman. But they're also working on a series, and so the hope is that it'll become a series and she'll be the lead. The backlash came not for anything she had said, like, right after it was announced, but it was rather her past activity. When I heard it was announced, I was like, do I know her? And then I remember I saw her in one of the John Wick movies and thinking, like, okay, she had almost no lines in that movie, but she had great presence.
Mm-hmm.
So she, you know, I think would make like a really good Batwoman from like that standpoint, because you know if you're going to be a bat anything, yeah, you need to be intimidating.
Right.
She was.
People need to notice when you walk in the room.
Right, like when you know she walks in the room and you're just sort of thinking like, I don't know if John Wick is safe. There's a presence there. But the issues came from the fact that I couldn't find any clear information. Things kept going back and forth because people just kept tweeting every last little thing. I probably should have just like looked up a biography, but I couldn't figure out if she was definitively a lesbian or if she was bisexual. But apparently in the past she has outed people she's been with, people who hadn't come out themselves.
Okay.
And so people don't take kindly to that, and so they really feel that she's kind of about herself and not about the community.
Mm-hmm.
So I could understand that backlash.
Okay.
So, yeah, so she just sort of ditched Twitter after that.
Gotcha. So it wasn't necessarily related to her being cast or the – I mean, there's been a lot of, like, people – what was the actress who was in the Ghostbusters, the new Ghostbusters, that ended up leaving Twitter over some really disparaging remarks about her role in the film?
I don't know. I know Leslie Jones is still on there.
Okay.
So I don't know if it was any Kate McKinnon, maybe?
I don't know. One of them I thought left or was thinking of leaving.
Don't know.
certainly received a lot of, just because she was cast in the role, people didn't like her, they let loose on her. So I thought that might have been the case with Ruby Rose.
No, it doesn't seem to be
It's just more of a personal...
Right. There seem to be some... But then there's people who are defending her. There's people who don't even realize that's what's happening, so they're defending her from the standpoint of, like, let her... Like, you know, are you attacking her just because she's a woman? And then people are coming back and saying, like, no, this is why. We don't like what she did. So I was like, okay, that was interesting to learn.
Yeah.
Hopefully she learned something from this. If that's what the reasoning is, if that's what the backlash is, maybe she can learn to respect people more if that's what actually had happened.
Right.
So, yeah.
I just saw her. I saw the Meg, and she has a supporting role in that. It's not like a standout role. It's kind of one of those roles that it could have literally been anybody.
Sure.
It just happened to be Ruby Rose, so her name was kind of on the poster and on the forefront at the time. And yeah, I don't really have an opinion on whether, as far as her role or her acting ability or anything for the part. But yeah, we'll see. Sticking with Twitter, James Gunn, you're saying is still Disney.
Yep. Disney had a meeting with him. They said it was kind of like a courtesy meeting just to see if he could come back, and they decided to stick to their original decision of him being fired. I read that Kevin Feige, who is the head of Marvel Studios, was not at that meeting, but he supports Disney's decision. And I really wonder if that was just him playing it safe of like, okay, I'm not going to go in there. Because from everything I read up to that, he was in support of James Gunn. And then he probably understood what the decision was going to be and felt like, I can't go in there and stand against my friend, but I also can't go in there and stand against
my boss.
Right. So he just stayed out of it and waited for final word to come down, which, you know, smart move on his part.
Well, I've read, though, that there's a good chance that at this point, Gunn may not even be available because there's been a lot of other people interested in hiring him.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to have any trouble getting work. It's me. I don't disagree with the decision. You do need to have consequences for actions like that. It was just why it came up. It's the why that bothers me, and I feel it empowers the wrong people. And so if you guys wanted to do, like, you could have disciplined them, or you didn't necessarily have to act so quickly. Like, it's a sticky situation that there's almost no right answer, and I think that's what bothers me the most about all of this.
Yeah, or they simply could have just, like, all right, well, I think this will be the last film. I don't think you'll
Something.
Come back. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it was just, it seemed a little quick, you know, shooting from the hip and, yeah, under the circumstances. I agree with you. It's the why it all surfaced. It's, you know, what he wrote and everything. None of it was good, you know, but why it surfaced and then the reactions that came after it from Disney and everyone, that's more the issue.
Right.
But yeah, so like I, you know, and I said last time we talked, I don't think he'll have trouble. He'll bounce back, and it looks like he'll actually bounce back stronger than he did before.
There's rumors that Warner Brothers wants to pick him up for something DC related. I'm just sort of like, I mean, I have said for a while, I think that if they ever did a good Teen Titans movie, that's
Gunn,
your guy.
He would be the guy. He's the ensemble cast superhero film.
Make it a family. Mm-hmm. You know, that was the whole point of Guardians of the Galaxy. It was a bunch of nobodies who become a family. To me, that's Teen Titans. It's a bunch of kid sidekicks who don't really have good home lives. Yeah. They become a family.
Yeah.
He's perfect for it.
So what other news do we have today?
The ongoing failure that is MoviePass.
Yes. You know, you would almost get the impression that they didn't know what they were doing.
I kept thinking that, like, the whole, you know, $9.95 a month for unlimited movies was just supposed to be like the gimmick to get you to notice them and to get a bunch of people signed up. And I just kept waiting for them to say, all right, well, that was a promotional thing. Mm-hmm. Anyone who signed up for that year, you'll keep it for the year. But when you go to renew,
$14.95.
Right, or here's the tier thing. Do you want to keep having your unlimited movies? It's $35 a month. Like, you know, people wouldn't have been happy, but it would have made sense. Do you want to see five movies? Right. Here's, you know, that's your $10. something. Instead, they kept trying to, like, have it all these different ways of, we're keeping the price that way, but you don't get to see anything. Like, because we didn't go to the theater, but my wife and I went to a restaurant that was right next to a theater, and out of curiosity, she pulled up what movies were available through MoviePass, and it was only 7 o'clock on a Saturday. Not two screenings, two movies.
Mm-hmm.
All of the others were blacked out because you weren't allowed to watch those.
And they were probably like, what, third, fourth week in the theater?
Right.
Yeah.
And it's ridiculous. So it's like, what am I paying for? So she's canceled hers. She was doing month to month. I have a year that runs out at the end of this year. I've already canceled it, and I haven't used it in a while because anytime something comes out that I want to go see, or
blackout,
or even if it's, we were going to go see Sorry to Bother You a couple weeks ago, and that had been out for a while, and I was like, I think this is the last week and it's going to be anywhere. The whole system was down.
Oh, right, because they ran out of money.
Right, but it wasn't even just that day. It was like a week after that.
Right.
They had, but it was just for that theater. I looked up another theater where that movie wasn't playing. That theater had all of its, you know, listings there, but the theater that was playing the movie I wanted to see didn't have anything.
I just don't understand. It really does feel like they had this, like, great idea, but then never bothered to think, all right, what would be the next step?
Right.
And then they just kept kind of playing with it and doing whatever. Okay, what do we have to do to make it work?
Yeah.
Okay, that's not going to make people happy. Why didn't you – where was your business model?
Yeah.
You can't tell me that you went into business with – okay, we got idea A.
That's it.
And?
It's the South Park joke of, you know, step one, do this. Step two is blank. Step three, profit. Like,
right.
No, you need step two.
Exactly. We're going to invent a plane. How are you going to do it? I don't know.
No, let's just throw things in the air. See what doesn't come down.
Yeah, that's the Orville and Wilbur Wright, the alternate universe where they didn't. You know,
right, there is no flight.
There is no flight. Yeah, it's disappointing. I mean, you've got the MoviePass. You've been struggling with it. I've got some coworkers that have all had it and that are just getting so frustrated and have canceled. And a couple of them, then, of course, you could cancel, but then if you canceled that month, we're just going to go ahead and re-up you
right
anyway. And you're like, no, cancel. They've gone through those issues. It's crazy. It's just ridiculous.
And then you go to cancel, and they give you this threat of like, oh, well, if you cancel, you won't be able to renew for another 9 months. I'm like, what is this scare tactic?
You're not going to be here 9 months
from right, now exactly.
At this rate.
And then it was like, oh, what's your reason for canceling? And I immediately scrolled down to other, and I wrote in, you have no money. Send.
Yeah. Yeah, so... So there we go. This is August when we were recording. We'll see if MoviePass is around in September.
Right. It's a day-to-day thing. Sometimes they'll have the showings for you. Sometimes they won't. I just recently, the last movie I did see through it, I had to take a picture of my ticket and send it. Mm-hmm. Like, guys, I've been using this all year. Now you don't trust me? I believe with the amount of movies I've seen through it that I've made my money back.
Right.
So I'm not really bothered. I'm just annoyed that they couldn't figure out what is easy to figure out.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. Well, it's going to be curious to see if this failure at MoviePass ends this entire idea, or if someone else comes along and says, all right, we're going to try this, or we're going to do it too, but this is how we're going to do it, and this is where we think they made the mistakes, and join us, you're not going to have any of this, and see if that would work, or if it's...
That has already happened with AMC. They're doing something where it's like, it's a higher price, and it's like 5 movies a month, and I think because that's how they're starting it, people are more accepting of like, well, that's the price, and these are the movies. I think when you say $10, unlimited, and then you try to make it...
And then limit it.
And limit it in any way, people are going to... You're taking away in people's minds. So AMC is doing this thing, and, you know, they have most of the theaters, so...
That's true. Good point.
So, you know, even though a lot of the theaters I go to are Cinemark, I think the only AMC is in Newport, so... But, you know, from what I'm understanding, that's a model that is working and that more people are going towards it. So I might look into that after, you know, MoviePass is just in the ground.
I could see individual theaters doing it. But I think MoviePass was, you know, it could be any theater.
Right.
Or a variety of theaters.
Right.
And so, yeah, I could definitely see where it would work for a particular chain.
Right.
Because, you know, they've got income no matter what, because they've got everyone else who isn't a member still coming in and paying their $15 or whatever.
Exactly.
So I could see that working with an individual chain. I was just curious whether you, if we're ever going to see another attempt at something like MoviePass that incorporates
everybody.
Everybody.
Probably not.
Yeah, I'm guessing not. It's going to be a little bit like some of the streaming services. You know, we were wondering, talking about streaming services or whatever, and you got to pay for this one and this one and this one. And, you know, is there ever going to be effectively what there is now where you turn on your cable or your satellite and watch them all? But
yeah.
Same thing. Yeah, just different directions, I guess. Some other news that has come up, one that being a Star Trek fan, it of course, you know, piqued my interest. Patrick Stewart has signed on to do a series, speaking of the streaming services, another Star Trek series, which will air on the CBS Now or whatever their streaming service is. And he will reprise the role of Jean-Luc Picard.
You're not happy about this.
I wasn't thrilled about it. I saw that, and I'm thinking, that's just, you know, I'm a little disappointed in Patrick Stewart for even accepting to do it, because it feels like, maybe not from him, but certainly from CBS's standpoint, it seems like a cash grab. And it's like, we want to make a series, and we want to make sure that it's popular. What can we do? Oh, I know. Get Patrick Stewart.
Which makes sense.
Yeah, but then Patrick Stewart doing it, it feels dirty. I don't know. This is like, I would completely expect it from William Shatner.
Okay.
You know?
And yet he's held out more than anyone.
Yeah, well, at least he hasn't come back since Generations, I guess, in any official capacity. So, yeah, Patrick Stewart coming into it, it's like I'm not interested in it. And I can't imagine, it's supposedly going to be like a continuing, it's not a reboot, it's going to be Jean-Luc Picard after his days on the Enterprise, apparently, and having adventures or something. And it's like, I don't know.
The thing that I
didn't like it. I don't.
I can understand
and
that.
And I'm like the only one online.
Right.
Everyone else loves it.
Because when I saw that break, I was like, oh, should I post this to the group? I bet Christopher will like this. And then you posted it. And I was like, oh, no, he does not. I understand what you're saying. But I'm wondering, because he is such a fun, positive person. Like, I love
That's
following
true.
Him on Twitter. I love when he gives interviews. He's just this, it's not even like this energy, like this super hyper energy. He's just this positive force. Like, he's this calming force. And I wonder if with him coming on, that's going to allow a certain mindset to come into this show. It still might be like action adventure Star Trek, but he's there, and that gives me a good feeling, because he's a good feeling. And, you know, he does like this work on like, with Seth MacFarlane on American Dad, and his sense of humor is just all over the place. And I'm just wondering, like, you know, how much creative control might he have or influence might he have? I'm like, he's involved. I've got a good feeling about it, because he's not the kind of person who just jumps on something to jump on it. He might jump on something for like a scene, and it's the funniest scene in the whole movie.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I like him, and I think he's making... I don't think he makes decisions lightly. I think he looks at something and he probably is asking, well, tell me what it is. Tell me the tone. Tell me what we're doing. Yes, I'm on board for that.
Yeah, they had to have come up with something that he felt was worth the time to do this. Or else that's my one little string of hope, is that he would not have signed on for it unless he truly thought it was something worth doing. He's not going to just make an appearance, and he's not going to allow the character Picard to be twisted in some way that doesn't suit him. Because I watched some of Star Trek Discovery, which is the other, you know, Star Trek property on the CBS app, and I wasn't terribly impressed. Again, I'm in the minority, it seems, on that. People really like it. I don't really care for the... I don't care for the dark and gritty Star Trek. To me, that's not what Star Trek should be. You know, you're supposed to have this gleaming vision of the future, and they keep trying very hard to like pull it down into like modern, you know, sensibilities. I'm like, no, we're supposed to look up to this. You know, we're not supposed to see it, our lives mirrored in it. We're supposed to look up to this ideal. That's my view on it. So Next Generation certainly did that through most of it. I think some of the films faltered a little bit, especially in the end. But I don't think Patrick Stewart would allow his character to, you know, do what they're doing with Discovery. You know, he's going to keep it as fun and interesting and intelligent as he can. I hope, you know, fingers crossed he will at any way.
Because what if that's the show? What if that's the show of it's showed to you as it's dark and gritty, but then Picard comes on to show people an ideal, to show people a better way? How would you feel about that being a show?
That's actually sort of been done. In there was a series called, it was based on some notes that Gene Roddenberry, he was trying to develop a new series. And in the end, it was after he passed away. And then Majel Roddenberry, his widow, and then the Roddenberry production, you know, the team and everybody put together, it was called, what was it called? Andromeda? Andromeda. It wasn't the full name. Gene Roddenberry's Andromeda, maybe. Yeah. And the idea was a ship from not the Federation, but from, you know, some alliance or whatever got like stuck in a black hole on an event horizon. Thousands or hundreds of years have passed, and the great empire or the great, you know, Federation or whatever it was has collapsed. And now the captain of this ship, the only survivor, is now trying to rebuild it and reclaim, you know, kind of rebuild this, what he considers as this, you know, rebuild the ideal, essentially. So it might be kind of a reboot of that, maybe, kind of thing. Who knows? If that situation came about. I'd be on board for that.
Okay.
Because the Andromeda series was clunky, but it wasn't horrible. It had its moments, but then, unfortunately, those moments were few and far between.
Didn't that? Was that the one that starred Kevin Sorbo?
That was Kevin Sorbo.
Yeah, I can see why that didn't do well.
Yeah, he was not really. I mean, he was great as Hercules,
and that's it.
Yeah, he's not the leading man that you need for something.
No,
it just didn't quite work.
Don't go from ancient Greece to sci-fi in the future.
Yeah, it's a little hard to separate the two. Another bit of news story that I had that I came up with was a story. And I'm torn on this one as well. There is a story of the Observer reporter, and the author of this article is Justin Cannell, I think, or Channel. I don't know how you say his name. C-H-A-N-N-E-L, Cannell. He wrote an article, apparently, he wrote a blog post or an article about the old Legend of Boggy Creek film. The author of this article was contacted by Pamela Pierce Barcelot, she's the daughter of the Boggy Creek director, Charles Pierce, and she's gained the copyright to the film. Now, previously, the copyright of this film was in muddy waters, as muddy as the Boggy Creek, which caused it to sort of be considered public domain, and so anybody and everybody was putting out releases, just copies of one VHS to another. So it's been just this dark and murky film that's been floating around. Well, now that the family has got the rights again, apparently the George Eastman Museum is going to restore the film into a 4K resolution with the potential for an eventual Blu-ray and theatrical release. And this would also be the first time it's seen its proper Techniscope format since the original theatrical release. Now, part of me is, like, excited that this film, which is surprisingly entertaining as all get out. I loved it. I couldn't believe when I first saw this film how much I enjoyed it. But I wonder if some of the charm of the film is the fact that it's dark and murky, and I'm worried that something like this film, this low budget, gets this big 4K and it suddenly stops being the scary monster in the shadows to, oh, it's the guy in the gorilla suit.
Yeah, I could see that being an issue. I think there's a lot to be said about restoring just like some of those really older movies. But I think people have gotten better at it. I can't remember what movie it was. We talked about another. It was like some old black and white movie. And I asked you about it because that was my concern about it. And you said when you had seen it restored, you said like the blacks were really black and the whites were really white. And it just, that contrast really just added something that you hadn't seen before.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if something like that with an older movie like this one, they might be able to find something different to show you by restoring it.
Yeah, maybe. I'm hoping, and maybe if they're going to do it right, maybe they're going to. I don't know. Would it be right to actually go in and like CGI out the seam or something? if it could be seen in the monster in the 4K print, you know, would that be right, or is that what you want? I'm torn. I really don't know.
So long as you don't CGI in an entirely new monster.
No, exactly not. No, absolutely not.
Here's the George Lucas, Steven Spielberg cut of the movie.
Have you ever seen Legend of Boggy Creek?
No.
No, never seen it. I've got it on DVD, which is, again, it's one of these who knows who put it out and how many lifetimes it lived before it ended up on DVD kind of thing. It's got actually some surprisingly tense moments that are you kind of sit there in the end and you're like, I'm kind of scared. What was that noise outside? You know, it's actually done. There are other moments that are laughable, you know, but it's an enjoyable film. But yeah, so at first I was like, I'm excited, a Blu-ray, a 4K, and I thought, is that going to ruin it?
You know you're going to get it and find out.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And if it comes to the theater, absolutely.
You'll be there twice. Rewind it!
Yeah, show it again. So, yeah, that came up. No, there's obviously no indication of when anything that is going to actually happen, when the release will happen, when the Blu-ray will come out, or even if. I mean, right now they're in the process of looking at doing it. We'll see if it actually happens. And I don't know. You know, fingers crossed, maybe, that it happens and it comes out.
Very good.
Is that the last of the news? I think I don't have anything else.
For me, it's one more. The great, the talented, the amazing Robert Redford has announced he will be retiring from acting after a 58-year career.
That is something. I'm kind of surprised, maybe. I'm not surprised and not surprised. He certainly has earned retirement. He's earned the right to sit back on his laurels and enjoy the rest of his life.
He's one of my favorite actors. I've seen him in a whole bunch of things. I like that he gets to go out on his terms. It's not like, oh no, he's come down with something and he can't finish a project, or he just, you know, just up and died, or you know, anything like that. It's just, no, he's like, He even said, I've been doing this since I was 21. I think it's a good time to walk away. And his last movie will come out later this year, The Old Man and the Gun, which was filmed here in Cincinnati.
Mm-hmm.
So I look forward to seeing that, his last movie.
Yeah, and it's kind of cool. It was right here in town, too. So, yeah, it's unfortunate. I'm interesting to see whether he truly stays retired or if he maybe shows back up as a director or producer for something.
Well, he said he was retiring from acting.
Ah, so there
you go. And he has done some directing before.
Right.
He first announced it like when they had started filming this movie like 2 years ago. And so as he's now promoting it, he's come out and said, yes, I'm still, he said, never say never, but I feel this was a good time to walk away from acting. So he's probably still going to be involved with things, but this is probably the last time we'll see him, you know, in front of the camera.
Excellent. Well, actually, before we break and go and talk about our film today, I wanted to mention about a couple other movies that I've watched recently. I just wanted to bring up actually a couple movies and a TV show, both time shifting a little bit. One is, believe it or not, it's Zombievers, which, you know, from the title alone, it sounds like one of the sci-fi original kind of things, and it kind of is, but I have to admit it was far more enjoyable than I would have ever given it credit for.
That's surprising.
I mean, I just one of these things I stumbled on. It was available on Amazon Prime.
Yeah, what made you want to hit play?
Yeah, I'd heard from a couple people just online or whatever that it was actually fun. And I'm like, all right, it's free. And I'm just kind of like, I'm just one of those moods where I'm like, I don't want to watch anything I really got to pay attention to. Okay, Zombievers, what the heck? Click. So I watched it. Really well written, well acted, and just enjoyable. I mean, one of the things that any film, especially when it's like an ensemble cast, is if whether or not you can write, and then if they can, the actors can actually pretend to be the characters that they're supposed to be. If you have three or four people that are supposed to be lifelong friends, do they act like lifelong friends? Do you believe it? These three girls are supposed to be like college sorority sisters. They've known each other for a few years. you believe it. You feel like they know each other. Like they, wherever they were hanging out, then they came to the set. And the rest of the characters in the film, kind of the same way. I mean, everyone, the way everyone interacts, the way they interact with the situation, which is ridiculous, obviously,
yeah.
You know, it feels real. You know, it's like there's a moment when one of the characters, they need a diversion. They're all on like the raft in the middle of the lake. And there's the, you know, the zombievers around them. They need a distraction so they can swim to shore. So the one of the girl's boyfriends grabs her dog and throws it to the lake. So the zombievers go after the dog. And later on, she's really pissed at him for killing, you know, it's just a dog. It was my dog. You killed my dog. It's like, that's just a little level that you don't expect to be written into a film like this.
Sure.
And it was impressive. And then the whole film, maybe the last half gets to be more of what you expect it to be. But the first half of the film, it was just a lot of more fun than I would have given it credit for. And I'm glad I watched it. It was kind of like, it went from a film that I knew about to a film that I would maybe even recommend to the right person.
Wow. Okay. Zombievers, everyone.
Another film I watched, again, just because, I don't know, I'm morbidly curious. I watched Baywatch from, what was it, 2017?
I wanted to see that in the theater, and no one would go with me. I would see it, like, in the previews, and I'd look at my friends, and I'd be like, guys, come on, and they would just shake their heads no. I was like, are you serious? This looks stupid fun.
Maybe we'll have to add it to our list to discuss.
Fine.
Because it's available on Amazon Prime, like I said.
Awesome.
It's, you know, when it, if a movie's free, I'm much more likely to watch. I think there are, I won't go into too much then if we want to talk about it later, but I think there are moments of brilliance.
That's what it looks like from the trailer. Like, there's just moments of jokes where it's like, okay, someone thought this out.
Yeah, but then it's like they forget that they were being really smart and clever, and they just go into, okay, and then a guy gets stuck in a chair. Yeah.
Sure, okay.
Like, oh, you, come on. So it's a little, it's a little uneven throughout the film, but I'm not sorry I watched it.
Okay.
The last thing I'll say on it is that I think the actors, I think, were actually above a lot of the content.
Okay.
You know, so. But yeah, we'll add that to the list of things to discuss somewhere down the road. Now, a TV show I've been time-shifting, really time-shifting, because I think this premiered in like 1960. It was an ITC, you know, UK production. It introduced Patrick McGoohan. It was his first big series. And it's called Danger Man. It was eventually repackaged and sold to the States several years later as a Secret Agent, I think. I'm just watching like the first season, which the first season is about like 30-some episodes, but they're like 24 or 25 minutes apiece. I've been amazed at this series because it's, first of all, being so short, it's tight. It's like, you know, it's an action-adventure spy drama, but it's less than a half an hour, so the story is tight. Nothing is wasted. They're intelligent stories. It's not just someone, I fumbled into this plot, and luckily I know who the bad guy is, or they exposed themselves, and now I have them. I mean, there's actually a little bit of thought, a little bit of mystery that goes into it. And the attention to detail by the production is what really impresses me. Just little moments. There was one fairly early on, third episode maybe, he has to meet with a CIA agent. He's a NATO agent, by the way. He's part of the, like, a secret service attached to NATO. And he has to meet with a CIA agent. And he has a little monologue, little voiceover, which he has to, you know, give like a passphrase or something so they know they're talking. He makes a joke about it that they must, you know, those guys must sit up all night trying to think up the stuff and whatever. And then when they actually use the passphrase and everything, he actually makes, wow, that actually worked. And, but they have to meet at a cafe in Paris, and it must be along the river or whatever. And it, for whatever reason, it doesn't play into the story, but they decided to set it in like early spring or late fall, so it's cold. So the guy's got their overcoat, so he's constantly kind of pulling it over his shoulder and to kind of convey that it's cold. But then they even go to the extra step. There's actually apparently like a fan off. This is definitely studio set, but there's a fan blowing, so their hair is constantly being tussled. So I'm like, you feel like they're on a street-side cafe. It's like, they don't need to do that, and yet they do that. And then Patrick McGoohan, I think, is just an artist when it comes to just being natural in the situation, even to the points of things like, you know, someone gets out a cigarette, which there's cigarettes, it's 1960, everyone smokes. So someone gets out a cigarette, so his character reaches to get his lighter to light somebody, you know, to help light the cigarette, but they all already have a lighter. And it's just those little touches that just make it seem, again, like the Zombievers a little bit, kind of like real within the situation. And it just, it's been impressing me. Apparently the first season is, like I said, like 30-some-odd episodes, and then it apparently went away for a couple years and then was brought back. And when it came back in, like, 45-minute stories. So I'm curious about jumping ahead and maybe going into the second and third season and seeing if the stories hold up. Because it's one of the things I really enjoy about the first, is what I've been watching, is how nice and tight they are. And you can knock out two or three of them in a little over an hour. But so we'll see what happens if I continue watching and if the quality stays throughout the show. Just wanted to bring it up. If anyone hasn't ever checked it out, it's one of those things that I've always heard about. I heard about because I was a fan of Patrick McGoohan. I really liked his series The Prisoner, which he does several years later. But so this was kind of like his early stuff. And so when I saw it pop up on Prime, I'm like, oh, well, what excuse do I have now? So I was really happy to jump into it. It's impressive.
Very good.
But that's it. So, okay, so we will take a break and listen to a promo for another podcast. And when we get back, we're going to talk about 2007's 11 Minutes Ago.
Hello. This is Rod Barnett, the host of The Bloody Pit, the podcast about eclectic film from across the decade. On The Bloody Pit, we've covered Godzilla movies, Doctor Who movies starring Peter Cushing, The Outer Limits, Fu Manchu, Doc Savage, old radio shows, my favorite movies of all time, a Lucio Fulci film or two, 1970s science fiction movies, and a long series on the films of Italian maestro Antonio Margheriti. So if you're curious to learn a little bit about some of the stranger areas of cult film and television, join me and my rotating group of co-hosts on The Bloody Pit. You might even learn something about Coffin Joe. And that's scary, people. Very scary.
Welcome back, everyone. From 2007, 11 Minutes Ago, this was something I suggested after we watched our last little time travel where we had to relive the same few moments over and over again with different circumstance. It made me think of this film. In this film, we actually see about 2 hours of a wedding reception in roughly 11-minute segments out of order.
Very out of order.
But this film, when it came to my attention back in 07, I think it was 07, 08 when I first found out about it, the fact that this film was filmed in a day in 11 real-time cuts.
Yeah.
So very little editing, you know, within the actual cuts and everything, intrigued me. And it still intrigues me. Maybe that's the best part of the film. I mean, we'll get to what your thoughts of it. I just watched it again last night for the first time in quite a while. I was curious to see whether I would still be as impressed with it as I am. I actually found myself a little bit more confused than I even was the first time. Like, wait, I thought this went. Wait, is this the first? No, this is the last. but eventually, I figured it all out again. I still enjoyed it. It was maybe, like I said, I think I'm more impressed with the technical aspects of it than anything else. But I still enjoyed it. Yeah, so I'll just go ahead and ask, what did you think of it?
The technical aspects are definitely the best part of this movie, mm-hmm. especially since later at the end they show you that, like, uninterrupted cut mm-hmm. of the whole movie.
And fast forward.
Yeah. Right, in chronological order, because that's how they filmed it. They wanted to give the sense of like a day passing. And so, yeah, they filmed it in those 11 minutes over the course. You know, it's, he's there for 11 minutes every 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So it's 2 hours.
Right.
But the story itself and the main character of Pac, I don't like him.
No.
I don't like the story. I think he's a terrible person who does not deserve the ending he gets.
Wow.
Yeah, no. I wanted him to get exposed at one point. I wanted her to push him away. I think he is a very bad... I think he's a predator.
Really?
Yes. He's a lot about what we've been talking about, how like this reoccurring theme in movies that people don't seem to notice of, well, he's the hero. He should get the woman. Just because. He's mm-hmm. a guy and he gets the woman. Why? What did he do to earn her respect and her trust? He manipulates her from start to finish. Mm-hmm. He manipulates himself in this movie. He even turns around and says, just make sure I come back. I don't know why I want to come back, but make sure I come back. Why?
All right, yeah. I'll accept that. It's an interesting take I did not think of before.
Certainly a
way to look at it I hadn't before.
Because as the movie starts in sort of reverse chronological order, and then it jumps around mm-hmm. from there, and then it doesn't really go in order at any point. I think it starts going forward again, and then it comes back. And it just gets to this thing of, I started thinking, like, is he being manipulated? Is somebody... Because I immediately bought into, okay, he's time traveling. Because the simple premise is, he's from 48 years in the future, where air quality is so bad that everyone has a diminished sex drive, and so the population is dwindling. So he's there to get a clean air sample, which... I guess you get from 2007.
Cleaner than it is in 2050.
You know, he can go to any point in time, but he's going to go to 2007.
True.
He's not going to go to, like, pre-man.
1700, yeah.
But anyway, so he gets his air sample so they can make a new air sample to mix into their air filters. And, hey, it works. But he decides to keep coming back because... The film crew, because he's traveled back 48 years from his lab, and he can't travel through space. He can only travel through time. So his lab, 48 years in the past, is just someone's home.
Mm-hmm.
And his lab is a bathroom now.
Yes.
So he keeps popping up in the bathroom, which to me was a joke they didn't utilize.
Yeah.
Like, why does that guy keep running to the bathroom every 11 minutes and stays in there for 4 minutes? No one points that out. I really felt there was a moment for humor there, and they let it go.
Yeah, or the fact that, isn't he lucky that the bathroom's never occupied when
exactly.
he needs it or when he shows up?
Right. That would be great. He just pops up. It's like, what the hell are you doing? Sorry. but yeah. So that was a missed opportunity. But yeah, so he keeps coming back because the film crew at the wedding is like, well, you told us to keep recording you, and now we're starting to believe you. And he's like, I've met you before? And mm-hmm. so it becomes this whole reverse thing. And they're like, yeah, you really wanted to come back too. I did?
Yeah.
Okay, I guess I'll come back.
Yeah, I enjoy that the first scene that we see is the film
so
crew.
So confusing.
The film crew telling him, like, well, this is the first time you've met us. It'll be the last time we see you. So good luck.
What? Which makes sense. But yeah, he manipulates himself because he shows up 15 minutes before then for 11 minutes. And he even tells them, make sure I come back. Tell me to come back.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why I need to come back, but I insist that I insisted. He's lying to himself.
Yeah.
And I'm like, who's manipulating this guy? It's him. And then there's the woman who's like, you know, all over him. She's kissing him. And she's like, I have an answer to your question. And I'm like, is he being lied to? I started to wonder, like, is he like a mental patient somewhere and he's being like set up? But once you get past that and you realize, okay, he is time traveling, I started to think some kind of sinister force was at play. And then as the movie finished, I was like, oh, it was him. He's the one who manipulated everything about this night. He manipulated this woman. He manipulated the guests at the reception.
That is true.
Everything that goes wrong at this party is
his
fault.
Mm-hmm.
And he lets it happen just to make sure it still happens later so he can use it to his advantage.
Mm-hmm.
That's messed up. He is not a hero.
Interesting. Now I'm very glad I had you watch this. I am. I like getting this view.
You see, like, the groom at the wedding reception is getting more and more drunk, and you don't understand why. You realize he lets it happen. You see the mother and father of the bride are clearly having a breakup. The father of the bride starts hitting on one of the bridesmaids. He encourages it. There's a fight about the balloon animals that get made. He's the one that told the mom, why don't you make some balloon animal? He knows what it's going to lead to, and he puts all of those things into motion. For what? Just so he can know about it later?
Right.
He's such a bad person.
All right, yeah.
I don't like him.
Fair enough.
I was waiting for, like, a bullet to take him out of, like, I'm some assassin from the future, and I know what you're up. Never happened.
Yeah, this was definitely supposed to be, there was no action.
was
not an action film.
No.
This was really
super low budget.
Very low budget. It was written to be a romance.
Not romantic.
Tate, from your point of view, is definitely not romantic.
Well, because the other part of it is he's traveling back, you know, 15-minute chunks, but for him it takes months to prepare the time machine. So it's 2 hours for everyone at this party, but his life, and we only see the time at the party, but for his life, 2 years have gone by. Because at first it takes him 6 months to prepare the time machine, but as he gets better at it, it takes him 3 months. So 2 years of his life are spent getting the time machine ready, and then he's only spending 11 minutes actually doing anything about it. So he's aged 2 years, obsessing over this woman, starts researching everything about her, starts researching everything about everybody at the party just to use it on her in a conversation to gain her trust. Mm-hmm. That's literally what a stalker does.
Yeah.
And she's never let in on the fact that he's a time traveler. She is never told, well, he's kind of, you know, tricking you.
Right. Yeah, I can't help but wonder, in the end, yes, he gets the girl, whether he deserves her or not.
He doesn't.
And you do wonder exactly where does that go from there?
Right.
Do you want to go for dinner? Oh, yeah, I don't actually have money or a place to live or a car
or exist.
A job.
Or I don't exist.
Yeah, you can't imagine that relationship's really, truly going
to
go
and
anywhere.
And he's stuck because he said that he has to leave every 11 minutes, otherwise he can't go back.
Right.
So he's made that decision. Yeah, I don't think that relationship's going to go well. And, yeah, because after dinner, where does he go?
Mm-hmm.
Does he live with the photographer guy that believes him? Yeah. Oh, yeah, you can crash at my place, creepy time traveler from the future.
Yeah. Yes. So, yeah, so there you go. So the technical aspect of the film
is great.
It's fantastic. I love that, you know, you don't understand how we're seeing some of the stuff we're happening, because a lot of it is first person from the view of the photographers.
Right.
But then there's occasionally you see another view from, like, behind a lattice flower display or whatever, and you don't know what's going on. It's all explained in the end. You get little hints from different characters. Like, where's my camera?
Yeah.
What? I don't understand, you know. And then you find out what's going on. And it's actually really neat is what I love is if you watch the film really closely, occasionally you catch a shape behind that lattice.
Right.
And I thought, that's neat. I mean, they really, truly filmed this the way you're viewing the film.
Right.
And then the real-time segments, no editing, done in a day. Yeah, the budget was probably only a few thousand dollars. It was someone's house. They just let them use. they had to rent a dress or something to the bride.
They got it off the rack.
I actually got a chance. I interviewed the director and writer, Bob Gabart, and the actress, Christina Morrow. I interviewed them back in 07 or 08 and talked to them and talked about them, you know, the making the film and the process they went through and why and how. And one of the things I remember them talking about was that the people at the party, who were just extras for the most part, were just back there. They said it was kind of fun is that everyone was back there. They kind of had their own – they invented their own backstories so they could just kind of be part of this. This was a big group of friends and I guess mostly just friends and family that had come and were who did this, but they just had kind of invented this life so they could be a part of everything
for 2 hours.
For 2 hours, yeah. It was kind of neat. I think it was the reason they did it was more of a to see if they could.
Sure,
it was just it was an experiment, and I think it was, you know, you can take the story how you want. And obviously, you know, I hadn't. Now I'll never look at it the same way again.
Good.
After talking with you.
Before I ruined it, what was your take?
Before you ruined it, yeah, I saw it as, you know, as this romance, as I saw it as a romantic, I guess, that it was this people that were meant to be together, who have a connection but don't understand why, just because, you know, fate says that they should be together. And that is a very romanticized view of it.
I would be more inclined to that if it was something like he kept traveling there out of his control.
Mm.
Like, you have a movie like The Time Traveler's Wife that has this whole fate thing that kind of plays into it, and there's a bit more of a romance there. He doesn't manipulate really anyone. There's times where she uses his time traveling against him, and I really think that puts the two characters on an even level. And, you know, that to me has more of a fate and a romance to it, whereas this is, it's one guy choosing everything that happens. He chooses when he shows up, where he shows up, how he shows up, and what he's going to do at that time. Yeah, he's a little confused, but once he gets a handle on what's going on, he crosses out all of the times he shows up, but he circles the time he has sex with her.
Mm.
And when he has sex with her, he still doesn't really know who she is. And one of them even says, like, so you're going to show back up in a few minutes? And he goes, like, that's a no-brainer. It's like he barely knows her, mm-hmm. and he's totally going to have sex with her, and that's the time he circles. That's not fate. That's he's manipulating himself to be interested in that moment to have sex with a person he doesn't know.
Well, I think technically he circled it because that was the time he originally, for some reason, skipped when he was in his first journey or whatever.
But never crosses it out later. He's never like, well, I was here.
Mm.
He's circling the moment he gets lucky. That's all I can see when I watch that part.
All right, fair enough. Interesting. Yeah, so I guess it's a film that one would have to watch and get their take. Although after listening to you, I don't know if anyone could watch it and see anything else. I think it's worth viewing to see how a film can be done on a very, you know, micro budget.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe just you need to hone the story a little bit so you don't turn your guy into pack.
Yeah. He's one of those guys where he's just like, no, I'm this honest, like, you know, dorky scientist. I was married. She died. Aren't I sad? I'm like, no, dude, I don't feel for you at all. And then there were, like, these side stories going on that, like, never paid out. Like, the one where one of the bridesmaids, like, her husband had died years earlier, and she's clearly still not over it. And, like, that didn't resolve at all. Like, she's talking to the priest, and it's like, I'm more interested in that.
I think some of the stories and the one blonde that was, you know, having an affair with I'm guessing the bride's parents were already divorced, but the blonde bridesmaid was having an affair with the bride's dad, but she was also there with her boyfriend at the same party. It looked like he may have actually been even in the wedding party, too. It looked like he had a tuxedo and a bow tie and everything. And she was bouncing back and forth between them. And then there was, early on, there was something of where the actual photographer had bought her earrings. So maybe she was sleeping around the whole party. I don't know.
Yeah.
I think a lot of that was just thrown in because they needed something to kind of fill space. And so it wasn't all about Pack. And
Cynthia.
Cynthia, thank you. It was just, yeah, just a human interest, I guess. But, yeah, none of it got any kind of closure or resolution.
The human interest being it's a wedding and everyone's miserable.
Yes.
Everyone's sleeping with each other or they're depressed or they're ignoring the bride.
Yes.
That was the entire – I just wrote down, like, this is the saddest wedding ever. And then you realize a good chunk of it is Pack's fault.
Uh-huh.
wow, he is probably, like, even though he says, like, no, they stay married. They go on, she becomes a stay-at-home mom. She has four kids. And it's just like, is that their way trying to justify that this night's terrible, but the life's going to be fine?
Mm-hmm.
Like, the guy got smashed at his own wedding. Like, they're not going to look back at this fondly.
Well, and everything that goes wrong, yeah, they got the film crew who's completely just focused on Pac because they now know what's going on. And so, yeah, they're, you know, they've been paid to record the bride, and they're not paying any attention to her. Yeah, the mom bringing out the balloon animals. We don't find out how much is Pac's fault until the last 11-minute segment.
Right.
And then we find out, you know, the reason the groom is getting smashed is because he's just, he doesn't understand what the heck's going on because
right. He
knows about the Pac.
He's seen two of them.
And he's just starts drinking, even though he's never.
He's losing it.
He's never really drunk before. So he's completely gone.
Because you keep seeing him go back to talk to Pac, and you don't hear anything because it's just fast forward. And I wonder how much is Pac saying, like, dude, have a drink. Go ahead. Mm-hmm. Have another drink.
Right.
Have another drink.
It'll all be fine. Yeah, don't worry about it.
Okay.
I still enjoy it. And yes, it does take a darker turn from, you know, your point of view and everything. But I still enjoy how it does all tie in together and make a little bit of sense, at least with the time travel aspect, which is not easy to do.
No.
In any time travel film, you can almost
right.
always pull a little thread and the whole time travel falls apart.
Right.
This one, I think, holds together better than most.
And I think that's because they filmed it in chronological order, and so now it was just a matter of just cutting it up and putting it in a different order.
Mm-hmm.
In that way, I mean, I've heard it compared. I read that it was compared a lot to Memento in that way because, you know, Memento's not about time travel, but they did film it in order, and then they just cut it backwards. And so, you know, you don't make any of those mistakes because, hey, we did just film a straightforward movie. We
mm-hmm.
just edit it funny. But even Memento has that dark turn on purpose.
Right.
This movie has a dark turn that it didn't mean to do, but I feel like I'm seeing it.
I like, too, that no matter how you view it, whether you think about it being filmed from Pac's chronological order, or you view it as being filmed at the wedding party's chronological order, someone has to pretend that it's the opposite.
Right.
You know, I think that's pretty slick.
Yeah.
Which I think is Ian Michaels is the actor who played Pac. He's the one who has to constantly pretend that
things are different.
And I think the whole thing is filmed by the. In the perspective of the wedding party,
mm-hmm.
which you actually end up seeing with the small handy cam in the end, fast forward through the day. So all those scenes that you saw backwards or mixed up, you actually get to see in order, filmed beginning to end. Neat. I liked it.
I did like it, but ugh.
Yeah, all right. Fair enough. Yeah, but it's kind of one of those films that I watched, and it's like, I want someone to talk to about. So I'm glad I brought it up. I'm glad you watched it. And, so it'll probably be one of those films that you can say, yeah, I saw that, and move on.
Mm-hmm. Here's not how you write your male character.
Yeah, this is not how to treat your time-traveling boyfriend.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, I guess that will do it then. I don't think you have anything else you wanted to say about 11 minutes ago.
Ugh.
All right. Fair enough. So before we close out, though, I do have a letter. Daniel Sample wrote in with an email titled Where the Wild Things Are. So right away, you know that he's a little behind. He says, I'm a little behind on my podcast and finally was able to listen to this one. I really enjoyed your continued talk regarding fandoms and all the nonsense involved with it these days. Probably talking about some of the news stuff we were talking about earlier. I don't really recall what we're talking about. Over the last few years, I have become so disillusioned with fan communities that I have pretty much left them and have lost the desire to attend cons and the like. That's unfortunate, actually. But
I think cons are fun. I think being a fan is fun. I think fandoms can be ugly places.
Yeah, they can be. It's unfortunate. I feel like cons are like one of those places where all that kind of gets forgotten for
a little
bit.
Yeah, the positivity comes out.
Yeah. And then, unfortunately, then everyone gets back to their Twitters and the Facebooks, and
yeah.
It all goes south again. Daniel continues, says, it started with the Gamergate nonsense, where mostly white men got upset that women got the nerve to start voicing their opinions, and then increased with the unnecessary hatred of the 2016 Ghostbusters movie before anyone saw it. I will say that I really hoped to like it, but found it to be pretty much awful. I found the editing and directing to be below subpar. While improving in movies can strike gold, this movie relied on way too much, and a lot of it should have been cut out. That said, it didn't deserve the condemnation it received. All right, fair enough.
I agree.
Yeah. I didn't hate the movie, but I didn't think it was great.
I thought it was okay. I thought it was an okay movie that didn't need to be made, because you don't have to remake a classic that everybody loves. You should, as we've said, you remake a movie that needs to be improved, and how do you improve upon Ghostbusters?
I meant the research and look up. I don't remember exactly the details around the Gamergate stuff. Was that just...
Gamergate was... It's technically still goes on. It's exactly what he said.
Just that women play games and...
And there are men who can't handle that.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. Continuing. The last thing I will mention, since this is going on way longer than I planned, are the fan snobs, those people who look down on new fans. Now, me being a geezer, I grew up watching Star Trek. I have enjoyed each of the following series, although some are less quality than others. And to be honest, I haven't watched Discovery because I don't want to subscribe to another streaming service. I think it's an issue with a lot of people. I know some people who grew up on Voyager, and that's their favorite Trek. I also know others who look down on them and don't consider them real Trekkies. I don't use Trekker. We are Trekkies, damn it. That's Daniel. I actually prefer Trekker, but I'm fine with Trekkie. Whatever. Since they didn't start with TOS or TNG, I'm sorry, let me read that sentence again. I also know others who look down on them and don't consider them real Trekkies, since they didn't start with the original series or the Next Generation. I just want to tell them it's just a show. You should really just relax. Hey, that's Mystery Science Theater. Get it straight, Daniel. I will agree there. I know a lot of the people who Voyager and Deep Space Nine are like their Trek.
Yeah.
And that's what the stuff, and I didn't care for them. I watched like the first three seasons of each and got bored with them and left. But I would certainly, I'm not going to bash them for what they enjoy. They obviously saw something in it. Maybe it's age, maybe it's life, circumstances. Don't know, but they like it. Hey, you like Star Trek. That's fine. That's what kind of keeps, Star Trek going.
That's why it's still here.
So, Discovery is not my thing, but Star Trek's still going. So eventually it'll roll back around to something that I'll enjoy again. Yeah. The nerd community has gotten rather nasty, and I have started cutting it out of my life. I still enjoy the shows, movies, etc., but anything outside of it, I avoid. Now, I don't know if that's... I understand his view, but I don't know if that's the way to go about it. I would actually encourage you to try to keep a foot... in the door.
The way I look at it is, if the community that you're a part of isn't doing what you like,
find another community.
Make your own. Like the Gamergate thing that he brought up really surprised me when it happened, because one of my closest friends is a woman that we play games with, and she's one of those people I'm like, if we're picking teams, I want her on my team because she's going to kick everyone's ass. So when it broke, it was like, I was like, oh, yeah, that makes sense that there are a lot of guys out there doing that. But I never stopped to think about it because I've always been playing with her.
Right.
And it's like, I'm glad she's there. And so it took me aback because it's just like, women are just as good as gamers as anybody. So what's the problem here? They're good. Let them play. Shut up.
Yeah, I honestly don't. Know where, I mean, the joke was always being if you're a nerd or a sci-fi or a gamer, you're some 30-year-old virgin living in your parents' basement. That was the joke. Why all of a sudden is it bad that there's women involved?
Right.
I don't get that.
Right. And so...
Isn't that a good thing to kind of break the stereotype?
So we have our own little small gaming community, and she's very much a part of it, and she's a voice in it. And it's like, anybody's got a problem with this, you can leave. It's our community. Get the hell out. So if there's a side of it that he doesn't like, just go out, start making your own. And once people start, talking trash, kick them out. It's yours. Do with it as you want.
Good point. Yeah. Start your own blog, start your Facebook group.
Yes.
Yeah,
and
whatever.
just draw the line. Be like, no, we're not having that here.
I think Daniel's talked about, I don't know if he has yet, he's talked about doing his own podcast.
Go for it.
And I absolutely. If you haven't already done it, you know, just throw it out there and, you know, make it your universe. And, you know, people will either listen or they won't. And the people that do listen, there's your people. There's your tribe.
Exactly.
You know? Get with them. Okay, Daniel Sample continues here. Now to get onto the movie. So here we are about the Wild Things. I tried watching Where the Wild Things Are, and I shut it off shortly after the kid arrived to Where the Wild Things Are. I just didn't enjoy it and thought the kid was very unpleasant and annoying and never finished it. After listening to your discussion, I'm thinking I should revisit the movie. I thought Matt's comments were very insightful and made sense. I will say that I have not had kids because I've never met anyone I wanted to reproduce with, and I haven't spent a lot of time with kids in the preteen age range. Matt opened my eyes, and I think if I give it another shot with his perspective, I'll find it more enjoyable. I'll end this by saying that I promised myself after grad school I wouldn't think anymore. Listening to your show has indicated that I might have been premature with that decision. So keep up the good work, Dan. Yeah, fantastic email. Thank you very much, Daniel. There's a lot there. There's a lot to unpack, and thanks for your comments on Where the Wild Things Are.
Yeah.
Matt brings some interesting views, obviously, to many films.
I have a different perspective whenever people like make me watch things. They're like, watch this, you'll like it. And I'm like, all right, now I've got comments. And they're like, oh, crap. But yeah, I mean, for a character like Max, the other thing is, please finish it just so you can see the whole journey, because that's what it is. I don't even really think, like we said, Max doesn't fully learn anything. He doesn't redeem himself, but he's starting to learn something. Mm-hmm. And he's supposed to be annoying. I always felt like that was the point in the book, too. He's a bratty kid who wants to get things his way, and he begins to learn that that doesn't work out. And so he leaves, and then he goes home, and he's not wild anymore. But I don't think he's going to just shut it off, but I think he's begun to learn something.
Appreciate your different views and your takes on the films, because I certainly appreciate it, Why the Wild Things Are, a little bit more after discussing it with you than I did when I was watching it in the first place. So, and as noted today, 11 minutes ago, yes, you want to destroy any fandom, here's anything that you enjoy.
Hi, I'm here to be honest and ruin things.
Have Matt watch it.
But I like having differences of opinion with people, because I always go into a conversation saying, that's just it. It's a conversation. It might feel like a debate, but I'm never debating, because a debate has a winner and a loser, and I never feel like either side should feel that way. It should be, tell me what you think, I'll tell you what I think, and hopefully we both see something different and we learn something, but we still hold on to what we originally thought.
Yep. And I think the future of the show, at least for the time being, is going to be a lot of that. We've each kind of come up with a list of films that we thought would be fun to discuss and have the other watch. A few of them we've both seen. A lot of them we have not seen, or each other, you know, hasn't seen. And I'm sure there'll be a couple that'll pop up that will get thrown on the list that neither of us have seen, and it'll be interesting, you know. So a lot of the show is going to be that from now on. So I think we're going to have some interesting discussions. I'm looking forward to it.
Yep. We'll agree, we'll disagree, and that's it.
Exactly. And the show will go on. And our fandom will continue. So yeah, that's going to do it. Thanks very much, Daniel, for writing in. If you'd like to write in, send an email to timeshifterspodcast@gmail.com. Join the Facebook group for any comments, or follow us on Twitter @timeshifterspod and @moviesatthemat.
Come at me.
That's going to do it. Thanks. We'll talk to you in a couple weeks. Bye.